Dr. Jeff Rippett on the line. Hey, Jeff, it's always good to talk to you, pal. You've been well?
Morning, Todd. Yeah, unlike many people in the area, I personally have been perfectly fine.
You know, when I booked this interview with Dr. Rippett last week, after I saw a post about how he was handling this in his office, and we're going to get to some of that in a couple of moments, I didn't know the Tier 2 mitigations were coming down the pipe at that time. I mean, I didn't learn that until, I guess, Sunday sometime. And so, you know, when I look at what you said and what I see going on and the numbers we're seeing, I looked this morning. They supplied the numbers for me. Heron Hospital, 21 hospitalized. Memorial Hospital of Carbondale, 24 this morning. No surprise to you, Jeff.
No, not at all. So that, by the way, is the highest number of hospitalizations through the SIH system throughout the course of the pandemic. And to give some perspective on that, kind of throughout the course of the pandemic, probably the average number of people in the hospital has been in the neighborhood of 10, give or take a little bit, which, you know, fit comfortably in one unit at Memorial Hospital of Carbondale, which means pretty well all the COVID cases locally that have to be hospitalized, they're on the same floor, they're in the same area. But now we're talking about two hospitals, two units at each hospital. I mean, that's just it's a much bigger deal, and it just speaks to how widely COVID is circulating through Southern Illinois.
You know, it's interesting because you have preconceptions. Let me share one, the word triage, right? I've always taken that as a battlefield mentality. Who can we save? What damage can we save? But I think I'm starting to think of triage in a different way. When you think about this, who needs to be in the hospital and who doesn't? But also, I think I'm starting to accept triage as the ability to staff the care for the person who's ill. Is that a misconception?
No, I think that's spot on, and that's really pertinent to what's going on in Southern Illinois right now. I feel like over the past week that for the first time I'm actually seeing our local healthcare system kind of being stretched. We're not being broken, you know, and there's still the ability to provide care, but staffing has become a bit of an issue. So meaning that we only have so many nurses who work in Southern Illinois, have credentials at the hospital and the like, and nurses might have to be taken away from people who are less sick to move to people who are more sick, elective procedures postponed or canceled so that those nurses who would have worked there can take care of people who are a little more sick with COVID. And, you know, you can postpone things like knee replacements and colonoscopies, but you can't postpone COVID pneumonia. So I think we're seeing a triaging, maybe not so much of patients, but of medical staff. I, for the first time last week, had to fill in some duties that I don't usually have just because there were some colleagues who were out being COVID tested with symptoms, and there were enough people out that nobody else could really fill in.
Dr. Jeff Rippett, your office in Murphy, right, Jeff?
Correct.
Okay. Here's another issue, and I think there's a clash of two medical terms that I think may just kind of be accepted as medical terms, and the significance is lost. One is the term asymptomatic. You and I talked about that before, somebody who's not showing symptoms. But the term community spread, when I was on the phone with emergency personnel, medical personnel on Sunday evening, they just said, well, it's coming through community spread. I think the significance of that, can you give me a good example of what you would define as community spread and why it's important to know what this term relates to?
Yeah, so very early in the pandemic, kind of the first wave came through, I guess that I saw anyway, back in April, there was a massive breakout at the Gilster Mary Lee plant in Chester. We would not call that community spread necessarily because pretty well every single person who we saw over the course of a couple of weeks was tied into that one particular facility. Then there were a couple of outbreaks at nursing homes in the area, and we wouldn't call that community spread because we could say, okay, you didn't get this kind of out and about. You clearly got this from being present at that nursing home while COVID was there. Community spread means people are coming in, and basically we say, hey, have you been to any facility where there's a very high rate of COVID? Have you gathered in a place, you know, a big gathering where there's a bunch of people with COVID? And the answer more and more these days is no. So we can't pinpoint and say, okay, all the local outbreaks are tied to this one facility or this one event or the other. It is just circulating widely enough that people are passing it day to day in routine interactions.
And that's significance, right? Whether you're going into the convenience store to grab something, you know, you bump into somebody in the parking lot that maybe they're walking by on the sidewalk. I mean, the randomness of that and the contact tracing. You know, the fact is, I call this the Gorbachev prerequisite. The ability to recognize when things have made a significant change, but you haven't. And I can't help but wonder, in my mind, this is what I call it pulling a Gorbachev, that things have changed right now, and they have with these numbers. And when you start putting this together with, you know, I don't know about you, but you probably get this every day, but more and more people call me, as they did yesterday, a friend of mine from Herent, saying both I and both the kids have COVID now. This things have changed, Jeff, and I think people are still thinking it's March and it's not.
Yeah, correct. And that's the big change, is that the vast majority of cases we are seeing locally, people don't know exactly where they got it, meaning that they can't say, hey, I was here and, you know, we figured out that there was an outbreak at this facility. I don't know where I got this. But again, there's enough people walking around with COVID in the community right now that going back and pinpointing that is hard. And again, that just speaks to how many people we have wandering around right now that have COVID and the ability to spread it. By the time we're seeing community spread, the numbers have to be pretty big, which is exactly what I'm seeing in my practice also.
Jackson County yesterday, the report, 40 new positive cases, 281 active. That's a record high in Jackson County. Kind of backs up what you were saying there. So the tier two mitigations, I mean, you've heard the people saying, look, we're using the wrong rules for mitigation. We're not using the correct metrics for deciding when we should do what to who. Do you have a thought on that, Jeff?
You know, the statistic that the government is going by is basically the percent of tests that are positive. I don't know, if I was doing it, would I use a different metric? Honestly, yeah, I probably would. But if you follow that metric back over time, meaning that if you look at the numbers of how many people are testing positive and you compare that to how many people are being hospitalized versus how many people are dying versus how many actual number of people are being diagnosed, they really all follow each other pretty closely. So I don't think you're going to get a significant difference in when the governor is going to recommend mitigation efforts based on changing which number we're following, because those things all really do kind of follow each other pretty closely. It's kind of like saying, well, do you want to base this on miles per hour or kilometers per hour?
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter too much. They measure roughly the same thing.
Well, an example yesterday, because I look at this every day, 10,573 new cases in the state of Illinois, 14 deaths. Usually when we saw 10,000, right, or anything near that, we saw like 86,000 or 89,000 tests, something really high. It was only 64,760 to derive that 10,573. 4,409 in hospitals statewide, 857 in ICUs, and 379 on vents. We've seen those numbers creep up, but the case numbers, well, do you think it's mutated to where it's less lethal?
So the numbers that we're getting right now for how many people are dying from COVID, so here's some of the good news, I guess, and there's been some good news in COVID this week, is we're down to a case fatality rate. So a case fatality rate means if you get COVID, what are the odds that you're going to die? We're down to about 1.5%. That is much better than it was. Back at the start of the pandemic, we were in the neighborhood of 6 to 7% for that number. So this is a fantastic improvement. It doesn't seem like it's because the virus is mutated and gotten less lethal, though. We, the healthcare system, have gotten better at earlier diagnosis, figuring out what treatments work, and just how to recognize it and treat it better and faster. So that's the upside, right? The case fatality rate is down. The death rate, though, so a lot of people confuse those things. Death rate measures how many people total are actually dying of this. It hasn't gone down. In the U.S., we've been averaging about 1,000 people a day over the past several weeks, even though more and more people are getting the disease. But that's because a lower percentage of people that get the disease die of it, because we doctors have gotten better at treating it.
Yeah. Well, I saw it was the Grossman Medical Research, I think University of New York, hospitalized patients in their research, death toll had been 20 people who were hospitalized, 24% dropped to 7%. I think in the last bit of statistics they did. So Dr. Jeff Ripa is joining us this morning. We saw the Tier 2 mitigation announcement yesterday on behalf of the governor. Starts at 12:01, tomorrow morning or tonight at midnight, if you will. Now, this is the interesting part for you, Jeff. You have ultimate power what would you suggest that we do in the community? You've been here right from the beginning. You've been on the learning curve and right there literally in the trenches. What do you personally think needs to be done in the community that is an attainable goal that would help assist driving these numbers go down? That's compliance. A tough one, isn't it?
It is. It is. If I could snap my fingers and say, look, if everybody would just wear a mask, practice proper social distancing, not get together in enclosed spaces in all these groups, things wouldn't be nearly so bad. It really would. Most of this is driven by not proper social distancing. Most of the infection spread, I mean, is driven by a lack of proper social distancing. We've all gotten kind of bored with the pandemic. We've all gotten kind of lazy with it, and most of us are just kind of over it, right? And that includes me, right? I admit I'm probably not as careful as I was at the start either, because I'm over it like everybody else is. Honestly, I really think only one of two things is probably going to end the pandemic, so to speak. One would be either an exceedingly tight national lockdown that lasted a month, meaning everybody goes home, doesn't leave their house for a month outside of the most essential of essential workers, to let the virus fizzle out in those places where it is. And I don't think that's going to happen. That's unrealistic. So the second possibility is a vaccine, which looks like it's on the horizon.
You know, Jeff, I've had a thought, and you mentioned the word quarantine. I'm a big fan of Roman history and what they achieved. They were a culture of building things, and they came up with this quarantine idea, meaning a quarter, 25, 30 days or whatever it is that you would be, you know, quarantined. And I kept thinking more and more that it was about the illness, and I'm thinking the Romans were smart in more than one way, that quarantine was a balance between letting it burn through a community and isolate while it does it, and the limit of time that human beings start to get a little nutsy whenever they have to be required to stay in the house. I think the Romans, we always have a tendency to look at it as, well, let the illness. There's two kinds. There's the ramifications, the second-order effect, and I can't help but think whether maybe when the quarantine came up with the Romans' idea, the 30 days was about all you could get somebody to follow those regulations. They were smart.
It sure seems that way. And I mean, I get it. I want to go back out to eat at a restaurant with a large group of friends as well. I want to go back to the bars. I want to do all those things, you know, and the longer this goes on, the more I kind of miss those things and just kind of ache and pine for them. Didn't realize how much I miss. So that, on a Saturday night, you know, when I'm bored and I want to go out and do the usual things I would have done, is right there in my face, whereas the thoughts of thinking of somebody sick is not quite so much there. And, I mean, a lot of us will give in to temptation, you know?
Yeah, and I've had to have that conversation with somebody who tested positive and say, yeah, I think I'm going to run down the convenience store and get a soda. Wait a second, aren't you? Yeah, it's just for a minute. It'd be all right. That's, you're missing the point here. No, it'll be fine. I just want to run down and get a soda. I've had that conversation, and by the way, they never turned out pleasantly. It's Dr. Jeff Ruppin. Hey, Jeff, I appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy, and thank you for all you do, Doc.
No worries, Tom. If I could get one last word, just to say, everybody, again, please practice social distancing, wear your mask, do what you can. We healthcare workers need your help right now. We really are being stretched a little more thinly. And again, I don't think there's any kind of immediate danger of the healthcare system being overwhelmed in the area, but if things get much worse, that actually is possible, where people that get sick, we no longer have the capability to take proper care of them in Southern Illinois. You're being transferred out to other places, you know, and there's all sorts of issues that come with that too. So my begging, I guess, would be for everybody to remember what it was like in March and April when we were first all very scared of this. Everybody was being very careful. We really need to go back to that for another couple weeks.